for me, I always felt that my hearing loss was tied to my intelligence, and that the reason I was so ashamed of my deafness was because I thought people would perceive me to be dumb or stupid, or that they would judge my intelligence. And to me, that was a really important thing. And I think for a lot of people out there, they feel the same.
Just before we get started, I want to give a quick thank you to today's sponsor, Caption Concierge, the captioning service with a human connection. Their reliability, speed, and personalized touch are just some of the reasons why I use them for the Hear Me Out podcast. Visit them at livecaptioning.com.au for your next live event and video. Welcome to episode 20 of the Hear Me Out podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in to the past 20 episodes of the show. It means the absolute world to me. It's been really a real pleasure to be able to speak with so many leaders and experts in the field, and just being able to hear all your stories, all your experiences, and really being able to share your passions and why the people in this industry do what they do. So thank you so much for tuning in this past 20 episodes. And I'd love to introduce my guest today. My guest has also quite a similar story. She has created a platform for people who are hard of hearing and deaf to be able to share their stories, to be able to express their values, and to be able to, and she's created a platform for people to have a voice. So it's my absolute pleasure to introduce the author of the photography book, Giving Deaf and Hard of Hearing Individuals a Voice and a Place to Draw True Empathy and Compassion, the author of Earshot, Kate Dishaquil. So thank you, Kate, for joining us on the show.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So thanks for sending me out the book. For anyone who wants to get it, they can go to earshot.com.au to pick it up. It's an awesome photography book. The images are amazing, Kate. Like,
oh, thank you.
So let's get stuck into it. What motivated you to get into producing a book for the deaf and hard of hearing? What is your story and how did you get into this space?
Alrighty. Well, I could go on for quite some time, so I'll try and keep it brief, as we've got many things to discuss. So I was diagnosed with a hearing loss at 3 years of age and fitted with hearing aids when I was 10. It was quite a negative experience for me. I basically spent from the age of 10 until the age of 26 feeling incredibly ashamed about my hearing loss. And because I had a moderate hearing loss, you know, I can speak clearly, I can blend in, I suppose, and, you know, you wouldn't, no one can necessarily know that someone is deaf or has a hearing loss unless they see their hearing aids, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And so it was a very negative experience. I didn't like wearing my hearing aids. As much as possible, just didn't wear them and sort of just got by. But obviously there's a whole lot of things I missed out on. And when I was 26, I was flicking through a magazine and I came across an article about a woman who was 27 and she was also deaf and she was also a photographer. And it was a really simple, like 1,000 word article with a photo of her, and I just burst into tears as I was reading it. And you know, she describes, you know, the awkwardness of being a teenager and missing punchlines and having to tell boys that she was deaf and how embarrassed she felt, but then she also describes the positive aspects of being deaf and, you know, being able to switch off and being able to sleep really well. Mm. And even though she had a cochlear implant, and so her hearing loss was far more profound than mine.
Mm.
But I just identified with everything she wrote. And for the first time, I'd actually seen or read or seen something that was the same experience as mine. And mm. the fact that it was in this magazine, you know, that made it seem worthy of discussion, and her story was interesting.
Yeah.
And I just felt like I was just shocked also that I'd never seen something like that before.
Mm.
And so in reading that story, I just sort of had this instant kind of realization that I needed to create something more that would give others that opportunity to see their experiences reflected in a way that made them feel like they could share their story, that they yeah. could accept their deafness. Mm. And that basically put me on a 5-year journey to create Earshot. It was first just a photographic project, because as a photographer, obviously, I was just like, I want to create a really interesting photographic series that shows this in not only sharing the stories, but a way that makes it seem beautiful and for people to feel proud to say, hey, I also have a hearing loss.
Wow.
And I don't need to hide, and to feel a sense of value. You know, I wanted it to be a work of art in itself, that it was would sit on a coffee table and you could pick it up, and not for it to be this medical kind of, oh, this is just a pamphlet about hearing loss. This is something that's has value that anyone can really appreciate. And, you know, for it to sit in a bookstore and someone to go, oh, my hearing loss has this value attached to it, where it can sit in a bookshop and people can pick it up and flick through the pages and feel a sense of pride. And
wow, you're taking it a step ahead of even making it normal, but you're really giving it worth. You're putting value on top of it. You're really elevating having a hearing loss and truly making it so people with hearing losses know that they're not alone, which I think it's really, really important in a lot of things in life. We often think we're going about life by ourselves. We're facing a lot of problems which nobody else is facing. But I think it's really amazing to see that, yeah, you're trying to elevate people.
The differences, I think that's what I kind of started to think about. It's not just for people, obviously, with hearing loss, but for anyone who has ever felt ashamed about a part of themselves. And I've had people contact me that had various conditions or, unrelated to hearing loss, have said, I have connected with this because I feel the same. You know, I've been too ashamed to share that I've got a chronic illness, or for example. So, it connects with a lot of people, I think.
Yeah. So I have a hearing loss, high frequency hearing loss on my right and normal hearing on my left. And when I read your other book, Fish on the Floor, and I got down to the bottom where it says, and still to this day, I have to remind myself that it's train of thought, not chain of thought. I laugh so hard because I have those instances all throughout my life. I have no clue what they're saying. And then like 3 years later, I have an epiphany. I'm like, that's why it's called what it's called. I thought it was called something else.
Oh, totally. It's like story of my life. And at least now I can laugh about it and not feel ashamed. Just like, it is what it is. And everyone has their own kind of little nuances and quirks that make us all interesting. And yeah.
Yeah. What do you see are some of the major barriers for
people to really embrace their hearing loss. Like, people wear glasses, I wear glasses, and nobody really bats an eyelid on it.
Yeah, good question. Well, I think one of the main differences is that hearing loss is easy to hide.
Mm.
It's not something that's visible. So I think for years it's that hiding it has been encouraged. You know, the way that the industry has kind of moved has got, okay, well, we'll create these devices that we can make even smaller, and we'll make them, you know, camouflage them into your skin by making them beige. However, that's only reinforced an idea that we should be hiding it, rather than, say, with glasses, for example, going, okay, well, we have to see them. Let's start making them look good. You know, we get sunglasses that are accessories, so why don't we turn glasses into accessories as well?
Yeah.
So, yeah, hearing loss is obviously much further behind in that aspect. It is obviously changing.
Yeah.
We're starting to realize that we can make it visible. And if people feel that they can feel proud of their devices and feel like it's a desirable wearable that they feel proud of, it looks nice, they're more likely to embrace it, to wear it.
Have you seen a perspective shift with the rise of AirPods and Apple really pushing Bluetooth headphones and people having things in the ears 24/7? I know my generation don't take things out of the ears ever.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember, it was a couple of years ago, and it was probably when I was like in the peak of like getting earshot ready, like making it. Putting the book together, that the earpods, you know, the ones that are wireless pods, started to really take off. And it wasn't just Apple making them, there were these other brands that started to make them. And I just remember seeing someone on the train wearing them and just going, this is it. This is like only going to benefit people with hearing aids. This is the future of hearing devices, because if you can have someone on a train wearing they're not skin colored, they're black, they're silver, they're white,
and they're terribly huge in comparison to AirPods. I mean, to hearing aids.
To hearing aids, I think. Absolutely. And I just thought, if you know, my hearing aids, when I think I spoke to you about this before, but my partner works in the music industry, and his role is dealing with musicians with in-ear monitors, where they wear little earpieces in their ears.
Something like this. That's for the audience.
Absolutely,
Yeah.
And I remember the first time I saw, he had one of his musicians, in-ear monitors, and he was cleaning them, and they had them customized, and they had, you know, a little symbol on them, and they were glittery.
Yeah.
And I just looked at it and I was like, if that had been my hearing aid as a teenager, I would have just gone, cool. Like, I didn't want a pink one that they give 5-year-olds. I needed something that was for a teenager, and it there wasn't. It was like, you get to a certain age and suddenly it's like, oh, you know, you don't want to wear a little gimmicky Spider-Man or Barbie hearing aid, which is great for little kids, but there's no in between. It's sort of like you're a little kid that can accessorize all your and I think that was another thing that I really struggled with when I was younger, that there was visually no representation of young adults with hearing loss. You know, you looked at at the time I went to Australian Hearing, because that's where kids go, anyone under 21 would go, or now 26. And all the imagery around me was of elderly people or babies. And so I just thought, if I didn't even, I wasn't even conscious of it at the time, you know.
Yeah.
It's a thing that you start to reflect on as you get older. I started to reflect on it because I started to make earshot, was that how was I supposed to feel okay with my hearing loss, or feel accepted, or feel like I, to not feel okay. Isolated,
mm.
if there was no one like me or anyone to look up to, you know, just seeing an image of like a 20-year-old would have helped, a 25-year-old, a 30-year-old, like there's this whole
there's a huge discrepancy between the people who they're putting on display versus the people who also need help.
Exactly. And I guess the other thing you're saying about glasses, it's like, yes, it obviously there's a whole lot of older people that lose their sight, but there's all these other younger people, and you see it marketed to every age group. And, you know, I just think that the industry has kind of shot itself in the foot, because they're saying, well, our market is for older people, so we'll just show older people, because the majority of people with hearing loss are over 60.
Yeah.
But in doing that, you've got 60-year-olds that don't want to feel old, so they're struggling with their age, because they're like, this is it, I'm old. And it's like, but if you just put 30-year-olds or 40, you know, 20-year-olds.
Even like 50-year-olds. Like
everyone. That would have. Then you don't have a 6-year-old going, poor me, I'm old. It's like, oh, well, if a 20-year-old can wear hearing aids, then surely I can.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's.
That's interesting. How do we change that perspective of hearing aids by really making it something to look up to look forward to, that somebody older than us was cool in their 20s or in their 30s, when we want to be adults as kids, you know?
Yeah.
Like, how do we make the perception that when you grow older and you do have a hearing loss, there are options?
Well, I think on a really basic level, you could just look at the optical industry and go, okay, well, what have they done? And let's do that. Let's show diversity. In, you know, ages, genders, race, that is starting to happen. It's happening quicker in Europe and the US, I've noticed. Generally they're just a bit more ahead. But I think, yeah, if Australia can just catch up, I don't think there's any harm in... Like, what's the harm in showing a whole range of people? I mean, I'd love to just sit down and ask a marketing person and say, why have you done this?
Well, for any of those marketing guys, audiologists or executives in audiology companies, listen up.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to, you know, it's something I've had to be conscious of, is not to blame anyone, you know. There's a lot of people have been really hurt, you know?
Yeah,
and so it's hard to not sometimes I get a bit heated just thinking about how much people have suffered unnecessarily, and I guess now just thinking of, well, what we can do to change it, that's what's important, rather than pointing the finger and going, oh, you did this, you did that.
Yeah. And I think there's a huge opportunity for companies to start changing more lives, as well as help their overall branding and make money at the end of the day, which is what businesses need to do anyway.
Yeah. And I think the industry, I'm not in the industry, so I don't... I'm in a different, you know, I'm in a more of an advocate activism role, so it's quite different. But I think there's just been a real lack of understanding and knowledge. And so it's sort of, you can't blame people. It's overall a societal issue that has developed over years, and it takes a lot to kind of like systemic change for people to really understand the depth to this issue. Takes time. And so I think we're really, we're in an exciting time where people are starting to become far more aware about diversity, giving voices to people who previously have been kind of pushed aside by society, or, you know, discriminated against. And now we're in a time that it's people needing to, in industries, are having to be far more conscious of that, which is a really positive thing.
Yeah, I think my generation is pushing for a lot more change and really demanding that companies are more transparent about what they do, and kind of getting the why behind why people actually do things.
Yeah, and what support people need as opposed to, I think, a lot of, I guess, areas where people have a difference, or, you know, that someone might think it's a deficiency to say, okay, well, we're going to fix that thing and make you more like, more normal, you know. How do we make all those people more like us? Because our society needs to be filled with perfect people who are fully capable, but that's never actually going to be the case. And people are starting to realize that no matter what technologies or devices or research you do, people are always going to have some kind of difference. And we need to kind of nurture that and celebrate it and acknowledge that, hey, that's okay. How can we all support each other rather than just saying, how do we make you, I guess, more normal or more like the rest of us?
In your book, you mentioned that there are kind of two or three camps of people who are hard of hearing. You have the physically deaf, culturally hearing, the culturally deaf and physically deaf, and the, I think, the small minority who are physically hearing and culturally deaf. Can you explain what that means, and what's the significance of having people with hearing losses who are culturally hearing?
Okay, it's a huge question. So I think an easy way to describe it is to say, to understand capital D deaf and lowercase d deaf. So first you need to understand that capital D deaf are people who consider themselves as part of the deaf community. So it's capital D because it's their part of their culture. And to understand the history, like, it's a whole other conversation, but that cultural deafness has come out of people being ostracized from society. You know, that deaf people were institutionalized. They were suffered a lot of discrimination and sort of ostracized from society. So therefore they built their own community, because, like, okay, well, if you won't accept us, then
we'll create our own community and culture.
Yeah, and so it's, of course, that's how pride, that's where pride kind of pride communities that's the result from. So culturally deaf people came out of that. And then you have, I guess, other people who are brought up deaf, often in a hearing family, a hearing world. and have never, like, and this is like myself, I'd never heard of the deaf community. I knew that there were deaf people out there that use sign language, and but my understanding of it was very limited. But I grew up surrounded by hearing people. There was no one in my life who was deaf or had hearing aids. My grandmother got them when I was at a similar time as I did, but
That definitely didn't help.
That did not help at all. Like, great, I am just like my elderly grandmother. Perfect. So there's a whole lot of people that grow up being, I guess, culturally hearing because they're given devices and they're sort of told, okay, well, you're not deaf because you've got this device. You can hear now. And they
come and conform to my society who is fully normal with fully functioning ears.
Yeah. And it makes sense because a parent, you know, who gives birth to a deaf child, they don't know anything about deafness either. And they're kind of grieving this idea that they, you know, you want your child to be like yourself because that's the easiest way to relate to them. And so when they've got this thing that you don't understand, you're just like, oh no, like, what is this life going to be like for my child? And so, and then you get introduced to hearing devices and cochlear implants, and the doctors say, hey, no need to worry, your child's going to be just like you because they've got this device that will help them. And, you know, we can go to mainstream schools now and you can just, everything's going to be okay because we can just fix it with these devices. That child, and what I learned from speaking to, you know, so many people about their experiences, was that they go through their you know, childhood, teenage years, being told, you know, you're normal, let's not
bury it.
And but they're physically deaf, you know, you take off that device and you can't hear your battery. If you've got two cochlear implants, you're quite likely profoundly deaf, and you take off those devices and you hear nothing, and or the battery dies and you hear nothing. And for that kid to be, or teenager, that's a really profound experience that hasn't necessarily been acknowledged as that deafness is, that's okay. You've got this thing, you're deaf, it's totally fine. You've basically got both worlds. But maybe they haven't been introduced to that deaf world. And so they're living this life feeling culturally hearing but physically deaf and stuck between and not really understanding where they fit in.
Hey podcast listeners, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the podcast. It means the absolute world to me. I just wanted to give a quick shout out to today's sponsor, Caption Concierge, the captioning service with human connection. They are committed to increasing accessibility for deaf and hard of hearing individuals through live captions and video subtitles. And their amazing customer service, accuracy, and speed of delivery set them apart from the competition and are just some of the reasons why I chose them for this podcast. Head over to livecaptioning.com.au for your next live event and video.
Yeah, and there's such a kind of cultural taboo around the word deaf even.
Absolutely, yeah.
I know that we were discussing last week that there were those associations between deaf and dumb and deaf and mute. And yeah, I think there's such a systemic issue ingrained into society that somebody with a hearing loss is either growing older and getting slower and things like that, or you're part of a community which is hard to relate to or hard to communicate with.
Yeah, I think that's what we were talking about, stigma. And you know, it's like this elephant in the room that if we all know that this stigma exists. And, you know, anyone working in the audiology industry, I imagine, is aware that it's a struggle to have that conversation with someone that says, you know, hey, you need to wear hearing aids, or you need to get hearing aids, or you're losing your hearing. And knowing that this person is aware of the stigma, and that's the main, that's the pain. If there was no stigma, it wouldn't be so hard. People wouldn't feel ashamed to wear hearing aids.
Yeah.
So, and I think we were saying, it's like, oh, people are like, oh, why is there stigma? And, you know, we don't know. And it's like, well, actually, if you look at the history, then you'll understand why there's stigma. You know, any culturally deaf person could tell you all about it, because they've
lived and
they're living it. They've gotten to that point because they have that awareness of it. You know, like I've got to this point because I spoke to so many people about it, because I was trying to understand why I had bottled this thing up for so many years, and I wanted to understand it. I wanted to try and fix it. And I don't think you can fix it until you understand where it comes from. And that's, like I said, that history of deaf people being ostracized, and that if you couldn't speak, you were called dumb, you know, deaf and dumb. And for me, I always felt that my hearing loss was tied to my intelligence, and that the reason I was so ashamed of my deafness was because I thought people would perceive me to be dumb or stupid, or that they would judge my intelligence. And to me, that was a really important thing. And I think for a lot of people out there, they feel the same.
Nobody wants to be perceived as different or dumb or with an intellectual disability. Like,
exactly. But we have, because society has tried to ignore it rather than acknowledging it, rather than talking about it. And, you know, it's a confronting thing, I think, for the audiology industry, because I don't know what it's like to go through that kind of study, but it's, you know, I imagine it's all about, okay, this is how do we
fix people?
Fix people. How do we allow people to hear? Which is great. It's wonderful that we've got this technology and now.
Yeah, but there, from my studies, there's just such a lack of understanding of where it's coming from and why. Like, and what is the history and the culture behind deafness? Yeah.
Yeah, and to be able to talk about it. And like, as I said, anyone with a hearing loss is on the spectrum of deafness. It's that's what deafness is not hearing. And so if you have a hearing loss, you have a level of deafness. And I think we need to start getting comfortable about talking about that. You know, I was like, oh, deaf people, that's not me, for so many years. And so it just pushed it away, because I did not want to associate with that idea that people saw as so negative. And in now accepting it, that was the only through accepting that I had deafness that allowed me to feel comfortable wearing my hearing aids. Because now I'm like, oh, well.
It was extremely uncomfortable reading this book. It's like there is a spectrum of deafness, and we don't call people, and it's okay to refer to yourself as deaf, not just hard of hearing or with a hearing loss. There's such a perception in the audiology industry that it's bad to call somebody deaf. And I think that's such a systemic issue.
And I, like, having said that, I know that, you know, you can't just suddenly just anyone who walks into your audiology clinic to go, oh, hey, deafy, you know, because there's a whole lot of We're not there yet, you know, but
definitely.
I think if we start to, and I guess that's what Earshot is that a whole range of experiences to give you that understanding that there's so many different perspectives. So you're at least equipped with that knowledge that there's different people out there feeling very differently about their hearing loss or deafness, however they want to identify it. But if we're looking to the future, if we start now with that understanding, then, you know, the 20-year-olds of today are the future clients. So if they're walking in at 40 or 50 and just going, oh yeah, cool, like got a hearing aids or whatever, like that's just
too late.
They've spent, you know, but there's decades for people to develop an understanding that being deaf, being partially deaf, being hard of hearing, it's okay. It's just it affects 1 in 6 people now. It's supposedly going to double in the next 30 years. So I think it's those, that understanding conversations that if it's audiologists not that don't have that understanding, then there's sort of, it's really, it just kind of isolates people even more, I think.
Yeah, I'm really excited for what Apple is doing. They've just released iOS 14 with headphone accommodations, which allow you to use AirPods like hearing aids, like hearables. So you're able to fit a audiogram to the amplification of your AirPods. So,
holy moly. I mean, I don't know what the quality would be like.
Yeah, but it's exciting to think that Apple is going to revolutionize the hearable and hearing aid market like what they did to the Bluetooth headset market.
Yeah. I mean, I remember thinking, I was kind of thinking how the music industry and the headphone industry are the ones that they kind of have helped the audiology industry hopefully catch up to go, okay, this can be marketed as cool or trendy. It doesn't have to be just a clinical medical idea, because I mean, hearing loss is a social issue. Anyone with hearing loss feels far more, it's not the medical aspect of it, it's the social aspect. It's every day talking to people, having to adapt to lip read, or it's a,
or missing daily out a conversation, or just self, like
how you
feel.
It's a, it to me, it never felt like a medical issue. It was like this conflicting thing where I had to go to the audiologist and fit these devices and feeling very disconnected, because it was just something I dealt with on a daily basis but didn't feel connected to medically. And I think that's a really interesting way to kind of shift the thinking and the way that it's marketed or talked about, you know, I think we were saying before that audiology is also about, you know, counseling and social work, because it is such a social issue. You've got to, you know, really understand what your client is experiencing, not just their audiogram.
Wow. Yeah, it's such a social thing. Hearing is such a social thing. We communicate, we listen to music together, we Netflix and chill. We use our ears for so much more than conversation.
Totally. I mean, and our eyes, you know, like it's all the senses, you know. And that's the other thing that I was shocked that no one ever talked about subtitles when I was younger. I was like, now they're so accessible, which is great. But it wasn't until actually I lived in Mexico for a period when I was younger and when I was studying, and I started watching films all the time with subtitles. And then from that point on, I was like, I need subtitles. Like, why?
I can't understand English, let alone Mexican. You
know? And I just thought, as a kid, I'm like, I wasn't really into cartoons. So I didn't know what the hell anyone was saying half the time, you know. I just got used to not hearing, you know, jokes on TV. Like, it, yeah, I guess I was just like, why didn't anyone ask me if that would have helped, you know?
Yeah.
Nobody, like, I had to discover that on my own. No one gave me any tips, you know, things that, or asked me. I didn't even know I lip read until I remember having sleepovers and not even like always, it's in the book, but how I was always the first one asleep because once the lights went out, I couldn't hear anything. And it was like, oh, that was because I could lip read, but no one had sort of talked to me about it. And so it was this little, all these little things that you're kind of figuring out on your own, but no one's asking you, oh, does it, you know, help?
Yeah.
My mum would still talk to me from other parts of the house and I would just follow to wherever she was, and no one said to her, hey, your child will need, like, she needs to see you when you speak, so maybe you should go to her.
Yeah.
So all those things that...
Such simple tips and tricks which can make such a difference in people's lives. Yeah. Me, myself, I'm absolutely hopeless in noise. When there's like more than three people talking, I can't hear anything anybody's saying. And it was not until like started this year when we were learning a course and somebody said, oh yeah, lip reading is super important. And I'm like, and people with the hearing loss, you'll see them looking at people really intently. And I'm like, is that why I look at people really intently? It probably is. Because I have no clue what they're saying auditorily.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that people do it with that, like, so subconsciously you don't even know you're doing it.
We adapt so well because totally. We do it for so long.
Yeah. But, yeah, why isn't that a common discussion? And I just thought, like, an audiology clinic, I was like, what were we doing the whole time? Like, I'd just go in there, get tested.
Press a few buttons, squeeze a few.
That was it, you know?
Yeah. What are some, like, maybe 3 to 5 practical tips audiologists can start to employ in practice that they can do or give advice to really help those hard of hearing people who are coming into the clinic? I know one of them we were discussing the other week was text your patients before you call them.
So understanding, I think what's sort of a big thing that I think is people unaware of is like, how do I flip it and go to their level? So rather than saying, okay, I'm here to give this person a device so they can hear and be like me, I'm going to understand their current situation that they can't hear and try to understand it, and so therefore fit into their world, I guess. Knowing that, yeah, texting, you know, being on the phone might be really stressful, can be quite stressful for a lot of people. So as much as possible to be using texting first, or to at least ask that person, you know, do you prefer, I can text you if you like. And
that's funny, I just realized another thing. That's why I'm so good at the keyboard. That's why I hate phone calls.
Well, now it's so much more common, so I guess we're lucky that technology has naturally progressed in a way that does benefit a lot of deaf and hard of hearing people. You know, we have video calls, texting. So it's now, you know, technologically quite much easier for people. I think that one of the big things is that audiologists need to, I guess, have that understanding of a variety of experiences, and in a way that's sort of what earshot is. You know, I put all those stories in there because I felt that audiologists, teachers, parents needed to have that understanding to support the people around, to support whether it's their clients or their students or their children, to understand their perspective and to know that there might be a whole lot of things, but to ask them, you know, what makes it easier for you, you know, can you hear me okay in this scenario before you keep going? Checking in with them, you know, making sure that they can see you, obviously. I mean, I think that audiologists should have that kind of degree of training where you're not turning away, you know, or like looking down at your paper when you speak, like try to be really present in the same way that a counsellor sort of is, you know.
Making the eye contact, building that rapport, and yeah.
You're
I guess we get there. we get taught that in class, but then we end up typing out things over here and writing our reports while asking you questions without turning our head, and like,
yeah, maybe it's that there's so many things you have to do, so it can be difficult, but your job should really be to listen to their needs, not, like I said, not just reading their audiogram, to try and understand how they're feeling, you know, what they want. I've heard some really negative experiences, and myself having negative experiences with audiologists, and I think it's that lack of empathy that that people walk out feeling like, oh, that they're not understood, that there's something wrong with them. And if you walk out of somewhere feeling like you've been made to feel like something's wrong with you, you then go, well, I'm just going to ignore that. No one wants to acknowledge that feeling. So they're just like, okay, well, see you later. I'm not dealing with this because I'm fine. I'm fine. I can get through. I don't need that support, so I'll just push through.
Dealing with the day-to-day struggle is better than dealing with the other person at the other end.
Yeah. I mean,
which is terrible as the student audiologist. I'm like, that's the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. Like, why?
Yeah, I mean, my mum, I remember asking her all about, like, I hadn't even spoken to her but really about my hearing loss until I started this project to really kind of dive deep into the feelings that we had, you know, that because she had all these feelings. And she sort of said in some ways it was easier that I didn't want to talk about it, because then she didn't have to talk about it either. She felt ashamed of having a child who was deaf or hard of hearing. And she said that the first time when I was diagnosed at 3, and the specialist, I think it was just an ENT, said, oh, well, at least she'll never be a party girl, to my mum. And I'm like, obviously devastated that someone's then said, oh, well, your kid's not going to be social and have fun. Is that what that's implying? And, you know, that was ever, you know, there's things that people that stay with people for years and years, you know, and that's, I guess, where that person-centered care and having empathy for you, you're there to listen, not to tell them what their future is going to be or what their life will be like. You know, you're not even there to say it's all going to be okay, because that's your role, is to listen and understand and then provide that support. And I think, you know, that I'm not a psychologist. I don't have that training in how you provide that kind of level of support. But I think if that person just feels like you understand them, then, and you're willing to listen to them, not tell them what to do, I think that's really important. You know, and just telling someone to wear the hearing aids is not going to fix the problem. Even though someone might think that, oh, their life's going to be so much better wearing hearing aids. Like, I've spent 16 years with people telling me to wear my hearing aids and it didn't do anything. It was only until I started to connect with the idea that it was okay to, yeah, be deaf, that I was okay wearing the hearing aids.
Wow. Yeah. Just to start wrapping up, what is one thing you would tell your maybe 12-year-old self if you could go back in time?
I'd probably say, read this book, Earshot.
I will publish it and send it back to you in time.
Going back in time. I mean, well, that's what, like, I've said it many times that the book exists for my younger self. Like, it's a thing that I feel like would have helped me. You know, telling someone, "Oh, you're going to be okay, like it's all going to be fine," isn't enough. I needed to just see hearing loss represented in a way that made me feel proud about it, to be okay. And so I guess I was always visual. You know, someone might, the story's in there, because obviously people, you know, I think storytelling is so powerful, but having those photos in there just kind of makes it feel beautiful. And so really, I think that's all I could do, is just like, just look at this book, and then you can tell yourself it's all going to be okay.
I love that. Yeah. For any audiologist who really loved Kate's story, you can pick up the book at earshot.com.au. I think it's a really amazing read and a really amazing resource, which you can even put in your clinics, so that the people who are coming in who are deaf or hard of hearing are able to have a resource to empathize with, to know that they're not alone, that they're not weird and an outcast of society, that there are people who have similar experiences to them, who like Kate, who has a hearing loss, are able to thrive and are able to really come on the other side of that experience and be proud of it. And I'm really excited for how the industry can really start changing and start adapting to truly empathize with the audience which we're serving and truly help to change their lives in a meaningful way, not for us, but for them. Kate, where else can they find you if any deaf or hard of hearing people want to reach out to you, or any audiologist wants to get a better perspective? Where can they reach out?
You can find me on Instagram at earshot.au. Also, if you go to my website, earshot.com.au, you can just send me an email. I think that's probably the best way to get in touch.
But, that's the first Instagram shout out I've done in the past 20 episodes.
There you go. You need to get on the gram. I think that's another platform that's really helped a whole lot of communities that have maybe felt isolated, that there is now such a amazing communities that have stemmed from that online presence. And yeah, as much as there's things that I get really frustrated with social media and it can be a pain in the bum, but that's certainly a positive aspect to it.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to seeing how all these conversations evolve and how the industry evolves. And I think it's a really exciting time for change. And yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Kate, for joining us. It was really amazing to hear your story, to hear your perspective. I think in the audiology industry, you really miss that perspective. And I'm glad that I'm able to give you this platform for more audiologists to hear your story and to start thinking of ways that they can help their clients in order to empathize more with them, in order to give them more options to ensure that they can understand what you're saying and what you're delivering, and to make sure that when clients or patients come into the clinic, we aren't scaring them off, or we're making sure that they are comfortable and that the solutions that we're giving them really fit their needs.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for having me on. Pleasure to chat.